takes you up and down and up and down, and you're crying and you're laughing and you're dancing, and everyone's, you know, the young kids are being one way and the old people are being another way, and yet everyone is funny.
That was Cher talking about Mamma Mia. What's the subtitle, Bill Bregoli?
Here we go again.
Here we go again. It should be pronounced again. That. Here we go again is right. We're going to talk about a bunch of things today. And
did you almost say I'm Jewish? You said I'm Jew, and then you stopped yourself. Be proud that you're Jewish. What do you?
I am.
People know that. Neil Rosen.
I'm proud. Anyway, I'm joined by Bill McCuddy.
Yes,
how
you
doing,
you are.
Bill? What do we do every week?
We watch the bad movies, so you don't have to. And apparently, we have Cher's in a bad movie this week, and so are a couple of other people.
And I'm joined by Bill Bregoli.
I played a Jew once.
Yes, I know. We
That's
had a
right.
whole podcast on that. You were Tevye in a summer camp production.
No,
it was a comedy version called Fiddler on the Goof, right? Wasn't
right. So. I'm going to begin by saying that I electively decided not to see Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, because Mamma Mia, the original, although I did love the Broadway show, the movie was my number one movie on my 10 worst list of the year. And I said, as a present, I'm not going to subject myself to this. But Bill Bregoli said last week when we finished doing the podcast, I will take the bullet for everybody. I'm going to go see it.
I know. And then,
take it away, Bill.
All right. Well, I'll explain what happened to me last night. I felt a lot like you did, and I went to what I thought was the proper theater, and I had the wrong theater. There was no Mamma Mia. There was no Universal people. I went to Lincoln Square instead of 42nd Street. But there was a very nice Sony rep there, and I said, what are you playing? She said, Equalizer. And I said,
"Ooh, I'm dying to see that.
I didn't get an invite to that. She said, well, blame blah, 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 the publicist. And by the way, did you know we had a bad week this week? Angela Galgani, our rep that we all know, was laid off. Mm. They laid off about 250 people at Sony throughout the country.
Why?
Money.
Money, money.
Why?
Why? Why? There's no other reason. So
they were just pissed at those 250
but
people.
But she was going to let me in to see the screening. I get upstairs. Right. I get my ticket. And there's the
this is great. So we're going to hear about
why
Equalizer.
Keep going.
Let me finish. I got up there, and there was a big burly security guard and a bunch of security guards and all these paper bags on the table. And I thought, oh, boy, they're giving us popcorn. No, those were for our phones.
Well, they do that.
They do that, but usually they tell you in advance.
Right, and you have to check your phone,
which is why I don't bring my
phone to a screening.
You know, this used to be a thing that only happened at, like, Star Wars movies. And
right.
It was just like, once or twice a year you'd have to do this, and it's becoming more and more. And by the way, we should tell people who don't know that when we go to these screenings of any kind, there are all these security goons standing next to the screen in the aisles watching for anybody that holds up a video camera.
I'm all for that because piracy
is
terrible.
Right.
And the way the phones are now with the lenses on the cameras on the phone, they're 4K, high-def 1080p.
Right.
So, if you got a little portable tripod, you could,
So did you have a little 4K tripod with you?
No, I didn't, but I had a phone charger in my bag, which the security guard took
issue with.
He wanted to know why I had a phone charger in my bag.
But well, wait a minute. You're willing to. You've given your phone up at
I've
other
given
screenings.
My phone up. He didn't want to. He didn't like that I had a phone charger, but he let that go. And then they're about to wand me, and he goes, "What's that lump in your pocket?" Of course, I didn't say I was happy to see you, which I should have, and I thought of that later.
That's the line.
But I pulled my wallet out of my pocket, and as I pulled out my wallet, my keys came out, my key ring. And he took objection. He said, "What's that?" And I said, "My key ring," and I held up my keys.
And it does look a little scary. I have to tell people who are listening.
He didn't like this little 3-inch knife that I carry.
Oh, my God.
Couldn't you check the knife?
He said, "I have to confiscate that." And I said, "You know what? The knife cost me $25. It's a really nice Gerber folding knife. It's only a 3-inch blade. It's legal in New
York
City
to carry." Just between us and the listeners, did you have any intention of taking anyone hostage if the movie was bad?
No.
Or they didn't give you popcorn or any...
Only if Denzel Washington was there.
Let me ask you this. If he was going to confiscate the knife...
Right.
And I'm looking at the knife for our viewers, it's a looks like a smaller than a it's like a Swiss Army knife, but right. it's a little smaller. Yeah. Okay, if he confiscated it, could you have gotten it back? I didn't even want to venture there.
I just at that point, I should back this up by saying
my man was pissed. You were pissed.
I didn't want to have a fight. You know, I'm like, I don't want to get into this.
Because the heat had gone down.
I don't want to be that guy and hold up, because I was the first one in line, hold up everybody else. And I also thought, this guy is going to go through everybody's bag now, and it's going to take them forever to get into that theater, and that's what they get for having an overzealous security guard. Also, to explain my mood.
Well, you taught him.
I just
Meanwhile, you didn't see the movie.
And I didn't see the movie. And also to explain my mood, I was at my doctor's earlier that afternoon and had blood taken out, so I was half a quart low already.
So the movie you were showing up to going to see was Mamma Mia.
Yeah, but at a different theater across town.
I changed my mind and said, well, hey, I'd really rather see The Equalizer anyway.
Right. Who
amen to that.
And who would not want to rather
Because see I have a knife that's 3 inches long, I couldn't see a movie where Denzel Washington shoots people and kills people maims them.
That's funny. So I might actually That's get that story. Into the news. Yeah. That's a good story.
Well, there you go. Well,
I also want to point out before we go any further that on a day which I would say is probably 93 degrees tops, but now we're recording this at night. It's about 7:05, and it's probably a balmy 89, 88 degrees.
71 degrees outside.
Neil has shown up in a cable knit sweater. Nana make that for you? Or?
I have not only am I wearing a sweater, I'm wearing a t-shirt.
Oh, my God, he's got a shirt and a t-shirt.
And a sweater.
Because you get a chill, don't you?
Because
I get a chill.
No, I've been editing you and Lisa Rossman and myself, which will
Hashtag
be on,
shameless plug.
The for talking movies are
So they
TV
have you
show,
in a refrigerator? They
and,
have you
yes,
in...
Yes, it's all the way in the basement.
There's meat hanging?
And Bill Bregoli, who works at CBS in the broadcast center, will tell you. It's freezing in there. I mean, it's like 40 to 50
okay,
degrees.
Okay, but it's a little warmer in this place.
I know.
So I've never asked you this, but would you like to take some of your clothes off?
I was... it's getting
I'm kidding.
Here.
I've said that many
so
times.
Take off. Yeah, anyway. So, you know, I was freezing. Freezing. So I just... I'm in the process of warming up right
Did you
now.
Have a muffler?
No, but... And this is no kidding around. My editor was wearing a heavy sweatshirt. It really is freezing. Everybody.
All right,
is,
fine. All right. You know, so you're fine now. It's okay.
So there
We're
you
all
go.
Okay.
So anyway.
So we didn't see Mamma Mia, so we dodged that bullet that we aimed at you, and that's
right.
great. But I'm dying to see the, even though I think
I'd
it's
like
going
to see
kind
it
of suck because it looks like in the last, what was cool about the last Equalizer was, like the television show, he didn't carry a gun. He negotiated, but you know the movie doesn't let him negotiate much. They amped it up more. So he generally takes an air gun or whatever in that Home Depot. But this one from the trailer, I see he has a gun. He can't wait to kill these
and
guys.
One of the people who return, there were three people who return from the first film, Denzel being Washington, being one of them. One of them gets killed. Apparently, one of the characters from the first film gets killed. He seeks revenge and has to go to Turkey. I studied up on this stuff.
For those of you paying attention at home, Neil just took his sweater off.
Okay.
And for his age, he has a marvelous physique. Okay, so we didn't see that. We can't recommend or not recommend, although I'm going to go. I'm going to pay. I'm going
to
buy a ticket because
I have to talk about it.
You know, Denzel is bulletproof, and I don't mean that as a joke. I mean, he's like kind of put him in anything, and I'll go see it.
Movie The Esquire, Roman J. Israel Esquire, dude, talking about Denzel being bulletproof.
Great. I mean,
did that actually make money?
It did what it set out to do, which is get him a nomination.
Yeah,
but
that was
I
the whole point
made
of it.
To make
any
money.
I think the only reason that he got that nomination, and Bill and I have talked about this, is the fact that somebody got involved in Me Too and did not get a nomination or something like that, wasn't it? And that was they say Denzel got that nomination because somebody else didn't.
Oh, I can't remember that. That sounds like something we talked about. But,
yeah, wasn't that your theory?
Maybe it sounds like something I'd say just
like
to get ratings.
The empty space
just to get
that
clickbait
would have ordinarily gone to Kevin Spacey or something. Or I don't know. Well, that doesn't make sense because Christopher Plummer got that nomination, but somebody didn't get a nomination. But
by the way, if you're paying attention or it's a drinking game, that's digression number one. Well, actually, it had been more than that.
All right, so moving on. We all saw the new Sacha Baron Cohen Showtime show. Showtime or HBO?
Showtime.
Showtime show called Who is America? And Bill McCuddy, take it away.
Well, I can take it only so far because I have to be honest. I was super kind of pumped to see this because of the promos have been really smart. Sarah Palin, who's not in the first episode, went really global with it and said I was completely duped and it's offensive to the people who defend our country because he portrayed himself as a veteran and blah, 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 blah. The reason I thought it was funny was because they do the Dick Cheney promo where he signs what's called a waterboard kit, but it was basically a 5-gallon water jug. So we don't know what they told him he was signing, because so much of what Sacha Baron Cohen does, and that's probably what this discussion is going to be about, is tricking people and doing things, low hanging fruit, making fun of things that are easily made fun of, and so. I wanted this to amp. He's been out of it for a while. He did that Brothers thing where he was a hitman and
the Brothers Grimsby,
right? Which
I
was
like
not
that.
Great. It was okay. It was sort of funny. Mark Strong is good in it. Whatever. But like, he's had a low profile for a while. For everything that's happening politically, for a guy who made his bones on calling out people in the government and stuff. He's been sort of on the sidelines, so I had high expectations for this. And when you ask me to explain what happens in the first episode, I'm the wrong guy because I bailed.
I will explain.
I bailed at about the 3-minute or 4-minute mark.
So here's
he makes me uncomfortable.
Right, I watched it.
He makes me uncomfortable.
And you know what? Ditto for me. I'm
okay. Well, I watched segments, and to be perfectly honest with you, after like 3 or 4 minutes of a particular segment, I kind of like fast forwarded a couple of minutes because I kind of got it. But look, I interviewed Sacha Baron Cohen for that movie, The Brothers Grimsby. And he said, I go, it's too bad that you can't do any more Borats because it was such a great character. And he goes, I'm an idiot. He goes, when I filmed Borat, I could have done the movie. I could have done like, just film hours and hours of more footage because the character wasn't that known at that particular point. Sure, it was an HBO show.
Well, that's the trick.
But, you know, he knew it was going to be dead on arrival once the movie came out. He couldn't do the character anymore. And he said that he should have just shot, you know, another couple of months and he could have had like 5 more Borat movies. So, you know, he can't do Borat anymore. He can't do Bruno anymore. And he can't do Ali G anymore. Now, when I watched the first episode ever of the Ali G show on HBO many years ago, I didn't find the Ali G segment to be that funny, and I didn't find the Bruno segment, which was the second segment, to be that funny. And then the Borat segment came on, and I found that to be hilarious. Now, in this show, Who is America, his opening bit is with Bernie Sanders, which is I don't think is a very strong opening bit. And he's, you know, the whole gag with Bernie Sanders is he was showing a chart, a mathematical chart, about how
the 1% right.
could be the 99% if he just takes the 99% in the column on the right and moves it over into the 1% column. And Bernie at the end goes, I don't know what you're talking about. You know, first he tries.
Well, first of all, you know that he's going to
disguise.
He's in a disguise.
So he's created new characters. He's in different.
He's got a lot of characters in this. Like kind of a Tracy Ullman thing. And,
yes,
and
very Tracy Ullman.
So, but the problem is, okay, here's the thing with me. Like I did stand-up comedy for a lot of years. I still do it at Caroline's. Please come and see me. I'd love it. You have people who do improv. And improv is a great skill. But you know what? If you watch these people who do improv enough, you realize they set it up a little bit. So when they go yell out a format and you yell soap opera and then yell out an author and then somebody yells Shakespeare. They've done Shakespeare soap opera before. They know that one of the jokes is going to be or not to be. Is that my apartment? Like they go to some of the same jokes. So the fact that Sacha Baron Cohen had this chart ready about the 1% means he was going to steer
Well, of course, he's talked to me about that.
Bernie Sanders to that joke, because that's going to be
scripted.
So let's say they had a 2 hour, let's be generous. Let's say they had a 2 hour interview. He was just about going and getting that gag. And that's what annoys me.
It was not a 2 hour interview. I think it was almost like a junket situation. Yeah. I think that somebody was saying that Bernie Sanders obviously did lots of interviews that day. I think he had like 10 or 15 minutes with Bernie Sanders.
Okay, whatever. And, I mean, he's got an agenda when Sacha he goes Baron in, which Cohen's, I don't blame him for. But
if you listen to what I just said, is that Sacha Baron Cohen said that.
That would be a first, but I'll listen this time.
That when he was doing those other characters, like Borat, it was scripted. And he, you know, he would improvise a little bit around the script, but predominantly it was, this is what I'm going to do.
Comedy talking points, the way...
Larry David
does, right?
Maybe
okay,
a little, even more than
but I don't blame them for that. Who's going to
so
go
anyway,
in? But
so here's the thing. So the Bernie Sanders thing was a little boring to me. Then the second bit was he's in another character, and he's this ultra liberal guy who apologizes for being a heterosexual white male, and then he's just catering to you know, my cisgender friend and this and that. And he goes to an art gallery, and he says he just got out of prison, but in prison he discovered his ability, which was making art out of his own feces. And he starts showing examples of this art to this gallery owner.
That's such borrowed interest, because who hasn't done that?
And she, you know,
Neil has shown me pictures.
This, you know, she's either just buying this hook, line, and sinker, or she's just knows it's just a goof, and she's just going along with the whole thing. You
well,
know?
As one reviewer pointed out, it's not really hard to tell Sacha Baron Cohen is in these prosthetics and these things. Like, it's not
hard
like,
to know that it's
not. It's easy to see who it is.
No, I don't
was
agree
their
with
point.
That. But the,
with the Bernie Sanders one, I'm like, that's totally.
Well, the good bit was the last bit, sort of like the HBO show when they saved the best for last. And he was this Israeli.
Yeah, only HBO does that.
Soldier, former soldier or something, and with his heavy Israeli
Iran,
accent.
Iran.
What?
Iran, I think is his name.
And he goes to all these members of Congress and these NRA people, and he comes up with this thing where they should be arming kindergarten kids with guns and training them. And he gets these NRA people and these congressmen to read this promotional script, and they are reading it with like totally into it about
Trent
like,
Locke.
Yes, four-year-olds can be, it's better to arm a four-year-old with a gun because, you know,
than a compass or a protractor.
They don't come to this with any prejudice. They'll, if they're trained properly, their minds are going to be totally attuned to this. And instead of throwing a Hello Kitty pencil box at a guy coming in with a gun.
But again, Neil, he goes to the NRA supporters. They're not going to back down from that agenda. They never have.
But to read this ludicrous thing.
Of course. It's crazy. And that seems interesting to me. I watched a little bit of it.
As you pointed out, is saying,
yeah,
yes,
I mean,
arming kindergarten.
But those guys are bought and paid for by the NRA. The most powerful lobby group that spends the most money of anybody. So why are we surprised? That's my problem. Like, surprise me, Sacha Baron Cohen. Don't, like, go to the low-hanging fruit.
Well, what
and,
do you think
and make an idiot of idiots. I mean, that's easy. We do that here every week.
So you didn't like the show?
Well, I bailed. I bailed. You and could tell me it was great.
Why did you bail?
I get uncomfortable watching him duping people that I don't think have a fair shot.
Why did you bail?
That's the exact same reason I don't like him. Bill and I are in total agreement on this.
Okay. Well, as a fan of Sacha Baron Cohen, to be honest with you, getting away from the political agenda or any of that stuff, it was a little boring. I mean, until the end of the thing.
Yeah, it was boring. Out,
it was boring. High five. Yeah, the last 2-3 minutes when he had that montage of the NRA and congressman reading the script, which I thought was just like crazy, that was funny. That held my attention. But there was a lot of setup to get to that point, which kind of bored me. And the thing kind of bored me. Maybe it's because I watched it very late at night. I don't know. Showtime.
No, I think everybody was bored. It got bad reviews. And what's really interesting is that there was so much hype for it, and it was well hyped before it happened.
Oh, yeah.
That it's one of those things in life. Now, see if you guys agree with me. When something is really highly hyped and then delivers on any level, the next day everybody is talking about it. And this was the next day nobody was talking about it, except us here.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty much, I mean, when something becomes viral, it's viral and it goes crazy and everybody wants to see it. Nobody's saying that about this.
How far did you get, Bill?
Probably you're on the same point that Bill did, about 3 minutes. Yeah, I'm serious.
Wow.
I bailed really early.
Yeah.
Like 4 minutes
in. I went in.
And I had a pre-thing. I was all excited. I got the same link you guys got. I
came in at midnight.
I got it like that day, like Friday or Saturday, and I was like all excited. I'm like, Sue, we have to watch this. Sue, for those of you who are just tuning in for the first time, is Mrs. McCuddy. And I just like, I was like, she didn't want to see it, and she was lucky as far as I'm concerned. Again, I'm with you. I'm a fan of his, but maybe we're a fan of a guy that had a one-hit wonder, and we keep going, when's the comeback going to happen? And I thought this was the perfect opportunity for it, and it's really not.
In his defense, I'll say he's very good in the Madagascar movies as the lemur.
Yes. And he was good in the... He was decent in Hugo with, you know, the Scorsese movie.
I'm a big Borat fan. Love the character. Wish he had done more. These three characters,
you know what he needs to do?
Are not great.
He needs to do something real instead of fake. Like he needs
to. I thought Brother Grimsby was like that.
No, no. What about if he ran for president, like Pat Paulson, or like one of those things? What if he did something like he probably can't legally, but like what I'm saying is, if he came out as himself, I'll make a perfect example. I hope. I always think they're perfect, and then you tweet me and tell me I'm wrong. Like, Russell Brand is a smart guy about politics. He's a smart guy about the environment. He uses his platform to stand up and make fun of things, and that's productive to me. This is not. This is like easy
street.
Okay,
so listen to me.
Do I have to?
Sarah Palin, obviously... can't take a joke, you know, because I don't know, we haven't seen that segment yet, but she was very upset that she got duped by Sacha Baron Cohen. Conversely, Bill McCuddy and I listen a lot to Howard Stern's interviews and that show, and this week, the guy who does Evil Dave Letterman died. Now, there was
he did? I know that guy. He was on my show in
the
90s.
The guy's name is Dave Van Dam.
Right. Yeah.
And Howard
I kind of discovered him.
Oh,
he
really?
Was on my show on America's Talking in 1994, and we had people like Anton Figg, the drummer.
Howard claims that, yeah, he discovered, but I believe
you. Of course, but actually, Howard found him through promos he started doing in New York.
Interesting.
After he was on my show. I don't want credit for this, but what
I'm saying is, about this Dave Van Dam guy who did Evil Dave.
He lived in Chicago, by the way.
Is that David Letterman apparently found the thing to be quite funny. And if you hear what this guy is doing, it sounds just like David Letterman. It's pretty vile stuff, you know? But Letterman was like, who gives a shit, basically, you know?
Right.
The only problem was Gary, his producer, known as Baba Booey, said that the producer called up and said, it sounds like David Letterman, so could you just make some kind of... So that's why they started calling him Evil Dave.
Well, he got taken off of these PLJ, or what's the local radio station? He was doing promos for local radio stations in New York.
As David Letterman.
And he got yanked off of those. Like, he got pulled away from those. He was a lovely guy. I talked to him on the phone all the time. You could give him a script, and as I said, you had to write it for him. You had to write like David Letterman, because...
He
was a nice guy. I've heard him try to do. Yeah, they do that on Stern all the time. They have
very fixated on some. Howard was saying on creating some of his own material, which wasn't fun.
Right, right. He actually, when I was working with him very early on, he was thrilled to be given a script and worked with it. And as I said, Anton Figg came on. We had some of the writers. Bill Sheff came on my show, and we'd have Dave, Evil Dave.
So you discovered this? How did you discover him?
He came to me.
Bill used to be host of a show called America's Talking,
right,
by the way, which was on CNBC.
And then America's Talking, which was now MSNBC, because it got bought by Microsoft. But this guy called me one day out of the blue, and he said, you've got an hour to fill every day. I do this great David Letterman impression, and he did it for me. I'm like, you're fucking amazing. He goes, the only thing I ask is, like, you're going to have to write it for me because I don't think like him, so, and I don't want to be, what he said, which was smart, was, if you ask me to ad lib, I won't be able to ad lib as well as David Letterman, and then the gag will be done, because then people will know I'm not David Letterman. But if you write it for me like David Letterman thinks and talks, I'll do it. And I said, okay, we'll do that. And then, as I started to say so many times before Neil Rosen cut me off, is that we had real people from the Letterman show. Anton Figg was on, the drummer. We had Bill Sheft, one of the writers. And we would have this guy call in as Letterman and go, get back here. What are you doing over there on that Pinhead McCuddy show? I know you're in Fort Lee, New Jersey. You're not going to make it in time for... And Anton Figg, like, freaked out and got up and started to run away. And I'm like, no, it's okay.
Oh, that's great.
And by the way, NBC lawyers, when I was working in America's
Talking...
They had the laugh
down, too, that I can't do it, but that Letterman...
Yeah. So they made us say that it wasn't him eventually, but I didn't have to say it at the top of the interview. I had to declare it at some point. And I wasn't allowed to say his real name because he didn't want to be known as Dave Van Damme. He wanted to be known as... It wasn't Evil Dave then. That was a thing that Stern people came up with. But, lovely guy. I never met him in person. I'm sorry to hear that he passed. I didn't know that. But that was his kind of thing. He was lived in Chicago, as I said, or did when I was working with him. And could nail it. Just knocked it out of the park. I said, do you do any other voices? Not really. Kind of just do Dave. And so, yeah, we had a nice run for about a year and a half. And
that's great. Yeah. Look at how that evolved into something that's more interesting.
I'm as stunned as you are. You brought something up interesting.
All right. Tell me about, we're going to get to a movie that Bill saw in a moment called Stoller's Point.
Solar's Point. S-O-L-L-E-R-S.
Solar's Point. I'm so sorry. But before we do.
So that was a tease for that?
Yes, it is. So Skyscraper, the. Dwayne the
tumbled
Rock
like the building
that we talked about last week on the podcast. Well, can we say it tanked at the box office?
Well, I guess
opening
we can.
Number three is pretty bad. I mean, the number one movie last week at the box office was
Hotel Transylvania
3.
Yeah,
yeah.
All right.
And
that's not unusual. The Pixar stuff that Cars 3 sucked and Cars 2 sucked, but they do great numbers. So that was. Sort of to be expected, but I think the real headline here, if I can jump ahead, is...
Number two was a movie that opened the week. What was number two? It was
Ant-Man and the Wasp. Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Right, which was in its second week.
So and first to second week fall-offs are usually like 60%, so for
so
it to do that...
So this new big movie that The Rock is doing, which had a lot of promotional money behind it, you know, and...
he did HQ.
He did the talk shows and... And who's the female co-star in it? It's
Neve Campbell.
Yeah, Neve Campbell. She was all over the place. So this, I mean, to open number three,
it's kind of a weird thing because the San Andreas and all those other like horrible things that he was in have made money. And
what was that piece of shit that Bill and I, you and I sat through that thing?
Rampage. Isn't that it?
Genetic.
Rampage.
Yeah. Now that did well, right? Is there a fatigue?
It didn't do great. It didn't
did
do
okay.
Great,
I mean, what I was starting to say like 5 minutes ago was that. This is a real vote of no confidence for the bulletproof Dwayne Johnson. The way 7 pounds might be considered like a downfall or Will Smith, who they all for years everyone said Will Smith can open anything. And I think the thinking here was Dwayne Johnson 2 weeks ago was going to run for president. They were talking about him as being a presidential candidate. I think that this is, you know. This should tell him that he needs to not just rely on huge special effects. He's a totally likable guy. My wife, again, for those of you new, Sue, Mrs. McCuddy, like totally in love with Dwayne Johnson. Thinks he's like really cool and handsome
My dad actually was a background extra in one of his films.
Oh yeah,
have you interviewed him?
I've interviewed him. He's a very sweet guy.
My dad saw him on the set
and said he was really nice to
everybody. No, he's a totally nice guy. But you know, these guys like Will Smith, who have this sort of business model and are highly like manipulated by their handlers, stumble every now and then. And this is a huge stumble for him because something like Skyscraper, although it's really close to all the other buildings falling down, natural disaster movies. It also, I'm told, and didn't see it, was ridiculous in the action.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
I did
like
see it,
nobody should have survived jumping from one building to the other.
Well, he should have been able to climb the building with duct tape on his hands. That's, that,
right.
That's
we talked
reason.
Last week
yeah,
about the
I
movie should have been under.
I don't think that's why the film didn't well, do well,
I don't know. I think I there's a little bit of tune out that becomes bad word of mouth when something is so ridiculously over the top.
It did well overseas. Well, it did better overseas than it did here. And Dwayne Johnson has made five movies or come up with five movies in the last 14 months.
Yeah, that's the other
He's
thing.
He's not due
Remember
for
Jude
another
Law?
One.
Remember like... Chris Rock going, you know Jude Law, he's been in every movie this year since blah, 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 blah. Like, you can definitely go to the trough too often. And yeah. I think that's the first thing he's learned. And the second thing he's learned is probably he's got to be in a, wasn't he in Get Shorty? Or wasn't he in, he's been like the big dumb guy in a couple of funny movies.
Well, first like, he started out, like, obviously not doing lead roles when he left the wrestling thing. And he had these, wasn't it when he was playing like a somebody in a dress or something like that? Or
I don't remember.
I don't know, but it is, you know, his career.
Interesting that that comes to your mind
well,
first.
He's not doing another movie until July of 2019. So
really?
We're going to go
Well,
a
that's
year
probably
him.
Wise.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I like him a lot. He was in Jumanji, right?
Right. And that,
so that,
that
made
started
a ton
the year
of money.
Off with a bang.
And that was a remake that shouldn't have, that was a good movie that didn't need to be remade, that was saved obviously by Kevin Hart. He's made two movies with Kevin Hart, right? He made that CIA thing.
Yeah, Central Intelligence.
Central Intelligence, which was not great, but okay. Like
Baywatch bombed, okay?
Right.
And, you know, Moana did pretty well, but he was a voice in that.
Yeah,
so I don't
yeah.
know if he gets credit for that in terms of his box office clout.
By the way, quick aside, Roman J. Israel made $61 million. look, he's going to be fine. I don't think his career is over. I don't think Skyscraper was a career ender for him. But I mean, he's got to pick movies better. That's all there is to it. This happens to a lot of famous big people who go on to make a dud or two, and then they go, whoa, 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 we need to rethink this. And so I don't think he needs a remake the way somebody like, let's think of something, like Pulp Fiction, the way...
John Travolta needed
a big jolt. I don't think he's at that point.
No.
But I think he's got to look carefully at what the next movie is and say, is...
Make an event movie. Kind of.
Are
like
the stunts I'm doing realistic? I mean, this is a guy, look at Walking Tall. Walking Tall was a remake also, right, Neil? And
Walking Tall
was like such a bone simple, like he's the sheriff, they whip his back, he goes in front of the jury and shows them his back, and like everybody goes, and now you want him to kick the shit out of everybody. That's the kind of simple formula he needs to stick to, in my opinion.
He also needs to, I think, maybe if he does less movies a year, make one of his movies more of an event, kind of like a Jackie Chan movies. Jackie Chan had this thing in China where his movies generally just came out around New Year's, which is a big movie holiday in China.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, and that made it like
that
big
was
there.
Like, ooh, we're waiting for the new.
He's trying to make John Cena. Like they're trying to like.
He's pretty good with comedy, actually, though.
Well, I thought he was really funny in Cock. Now you think terrible. I watched it with my wife. By the way, if you're just joining, her name is Mrs. McCuddy Sue. third time to that
it's the
running
Sue
gag.
McCuddy,
no, see,
it's
called a running gag. Let me okay. acclimate
What's
you in
the
world
movie?
Of comedy.
I hated it, and you
Cock Blockers.
Yeah, that was just
awful. I thought it was did you see that movie?
Yeah, I saw it.
I thought it was warm
I thought
and
I saw,
funny.
Didn't we see it?
Really
the
funny.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah,
we
was,
did.
I hated it.
I wasn't right. crazy well, about it, but
by
I,
the way,
I like
I've been
the
dying to
lines.
Say this on the podcast and we keep forgetting every week. Neil Rosen once again very wrong. Rent Cock Blockers, it's out there and
you want to listen and not listen to me.
I was there.
No, I'm not telling him to rent it. I'm telling people
listen. Don't blame me. It was a horrible
the
premise is ridiculous.
It's cute.
That the parents are trying to stop the kids from having sex on prom night.
Yeah, but you
didn't
recognize
that?
It. You didn't recognize anything about that as a parent, like being concerned that your kid was.
It was the execution was terrible. The writing was terrible. The direction was slipshod. The whole thing was just not funny. I just didn't like it. I mean, John
so
Cena
wrong.
Was is Cena.
He's so wrong.
Cena, it's
once
yeah, he's
again.
Trying to.
He's wrong every week, but
parents,
he's really wrong this week. This is a week when he's so wrong.
Okay.
Yeah, fine. Well, anyway, so tell me about your movie, Bill.
Solar's Point.
Oh yeah, Solar's Point is a little movie. Jim Belushi plays the father, but watch it anyway, because you're gonna be surprised. No, it's not a comedy at all, and it's It's a low-budget film about a guy just out of prison who goes back to live with his father because he has to, and gets sucked into selling drugs again. And it stars this guy, Lombardi, but I can't think of it. McCall Lombardi. Now, this guy to me is like kind of a young Steve McQueen, and I know that's a big thing to say.
Yeah, that's a big thing to say, man.
No, it truly is. He has a kind of
electrifying. He's like a young Marlon Brando.
Electrifying blue eyes. You've seen him in. He was great in Patty Cakes. He was in American Honey, which was that long movie that Riley Keough was in. He's in Killing Animals. I think he's somebody to watch. So my advice is, this is a cool small movie about a kid just out of prison who has to acclimate. You know, he's got a parole officer. He's trying to go straight, kind of, but he's kind of a slacker. And it's a small movie, but I recommend it. So,
All right. So Kubrick has a lost screenplay that has surfaced, and now they're thinking of making it. And it's apparently the anti-Lolita. It's like a not a sequel to Lolita, but like a follow-up. And they don't really tell you
She's
much.
She's 15 now?
No, no. I think it's the other way around. I think it's about a young boy or something like that. I don't know. They're not like
we had funny. That. It was called Call Me by Your Name.
Kubrick's dead, and there was all this secrecy that was always surrounding any Kubrick movie.
It sounds wildly inappropriate.
And they're not even.
But also, it sounds wildly inappropriate for
2018. But the fact that there's this fully finished screenplay that was—it's from like the early 1960s.
But didn't Kubrick stop and start a bunch of projects and just?
Yeah, I mean, the fact is, like, if it's the early 60s, it's not like he did this. You know, he wrote it while he was doing his last movie, Eyes Wide Shut, or something. And he obviously decided not to film this thing. So, what does that say about this thing? But somebody's going to pick it up. They say, and they're going to do it. And also in movie news, for some reason, I didn't even know this thing was still popular anymore, but Rugrats is, they're going to make another Rugrats movie. And I will tell you a story that when my daughter, who's now 24, when she was a little kid, I used to go to a lot of stuff.
Didn't we go to Europe for that? Wasn't there a Rugrats?
I don't think it was in Europe.
Go to London or something?
I don't know. There was one in New York that I remember doing.
There was a junket someplace like... Yeah. Really exotic for one of the Rugrats movies, I think.
When you have a young child, you go to stuff that you ordinarily would never go to as an adult, like Aladdin on Ice. And I mean, just stuff that in a million years. And, you know, to be honest with you, you know, if your kid's enjoying, you know, himself or herself, I wind up having a good time. And I wound up appreciating a lot of movies that were not, didn't have that, like a Pixar double-edged thing where grown-ups would appreciate it on one. You know,
but your kid is digging it, and you're like, oh, well, this is great.
Yeah, it's like, okay, I would sit through whatever this cartoon was with her at home, and now there's a live version of it, and okay, and kids enjoying it, I'm enjoying it. But I have to tell you, I went to see Rugrats at Radio City Music Hall, and my daughter enjoying it or not, this was the worst thing I have ever seen.
Oh, Neil Rosen, what do you like?
It was horrible.
This was a stage play?
It was like Rugrats Live, you know? And it was all these people in masks and, you know, full dressed up.
Sounds
like
creepy.
Rugrats characters. There was no plot or semblance to the whole thing. They were just screaming on stage. And at the intermission, there was this woman sitting in the middle of the aisle, and she got out to work, and she just looks at me. I don't think she knew who I was from television. She just looked at me.
Oh, that's not likely.
She said, "Was that like the worst thing that like you've ever seen, like ever?" And I said, "Yeah, tell me about it." And I actually went back after, you know, because my kid wanted to see this. Horrible. So they're making another Rugrats movie.
I can't wait now.
I will not be seeing it, unfortunately.
Well, my personal story about that, which I'll make 30 seconds or 20. The daughter of Sue McCuddy is my daughter, Lily. And we went to see when she was like 4. Remember how bad we all thought The Cat in the Hat with Mike Myers was?
Oh, yeah. That was a piece of shit. And the book is great.
She
and I'm not making a joke.
Loved it. Loved it. She was 4. Wow. She was digging all the songs, digging everything. And then I'll never forget, I was sitting right next to her. It was a critic screening, but it was full of kids and everything. And the credits come on and the music starts, and my daughter out of nowhere, just leaps off of her seat and just starts dancing. And I'm like, oh my God, she loves this piece of shit. Wow. And her taste has gotten a little better. But
Bill Regoli.
Yes.
Bill and I have both have daughters. Not having children and having to sit through this stuff.
Would you go to Rugrats? How many apples?
I went to a junket for Rugrats. I feel a little self-conscious going to movies by, I've borrowed kids to go to movies with.
Is that true?
Yeah. Bill goes just to see the other children, but that's another story.
I go to scope out the single moms. That's why I go.
New on demand is a movie called Shock and Awe that was directed by Meathead and stars James Marsden and Woody Harrelson about a newspaper that challenged the weapons of mass destruction and is getting decent reviews. It's available to stream, so I haven't seen it, but I think it's worth a look.
All right. And what opening next week. Well, opening next week is Mission Impossible.
We've all seen, or I've
only... Well, I'll see on I think the 23rd.
Oh, right. And you haven't seen it, right, Neil?
No, I will though. And it's this is the fourth one or the
fifth one, right?
Fifth one. I think it's the fifth one, yeah.
It might be the sixth. I don't know. It's like...
Well, they'll keep cranking them out as long as they're making money.
I was embargoed until like 3 days ago, and I can tell you it's really terrific. So we'll talk about it.
So we're in the middle of July. What are the big blockbuster movies that... I mean, it seems like the summer is like, from a movie standpoint, the big guns have already, come
been
out.
Shot.
August is not a big...
No, well, August is never a big thing, but is there...
So there's that Will Arnett movie that you've seen coming out.
That's correct.
What's that called?
It's called... It's based on a TV cartoon. This is Teen Titans Go!
So I have high expectations already.
And I'll tell you about my Will Arnett interview.
Was he nice to you?
He's very nice. Very, very
nice. Is he still friendly with Amy Poehler?
I didn't go there.
Yeah, okay.
But I'm saying this Christopher Robin movie, which is opening wide in August... I mean, Disney is spending so much money promoting that. Every time I go to some movie-oriented page on my computer, there's a huge banner ad for Christopher Robin. If I go to look at a trailer on YouTube, it's preceded by a trailer. You can skip this ad for Christopher Robin.
What was
Robin.
That shitty Christopher Robin movie last year about the guy
Hampton Film
about
Festival.
Milne or about the guy?
Yeah, he played at the Hampton Film Festival, and we both skipped it.
It did. No, I saw it there.
Oh, God. How bad was that?
Yeah, I didn't like it, but I thought maybe audiences will like this piece of shit, but they didn't.
Yeah, you're right, Bill Regoli. The summer's kind of the real big stuff,
It's over.
Dog Days, The Meg. These are the movies that are opening. The Dark.
Well,
now
The Meg is a big movie. That's the shark that's the size of a whale starring Jason Statham. Uh-huh. And that's, who's can't wait for
that? We talked about that on the TV show.
Our colleague, Chris Nadawashi. From
Najawadi,
whatever.
You must learn to pronounce his name correctly.
That's the movie he's most looking forward to this year. I was invited to McQueen, which got 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is the documentary about Alexander McQueen. I'm going tomorrow night to a Peggy Siegel dinner for is it Crazy Rich Asians or Crazy Stupid Asians or something? That's a comedy that's supposed to be politically incorrect and funny.
Billionaire's Boys Club is coming out. That's a movie with Kevin Spacey.
Okay.
And the studio decided that their line was that 200 and some odd people worked on this movie, and we can't cut them out of the movie like Christopher Plummer and so we're releasing the movie, and that's what we're doing. So
top streaming right now is just out this week is Isle of Dogs, which I never saw. Which I am I like him. I like the director and who the crazy wears all the short pants and short corduroy clothes. The super eccentric guy.
The super eccentric
that The guy who made King, Moonrise Kingdom and...
Wes Anderson?
Wes Anderson's animated movie, Isle of Dogs. Disobedience, the movie that you did with the two hot Rachels.
Well, that's been out for a long time.
No, it's one of the top streaming movies now. It's not new this week. Tully is doing well. I like Tully. You didn't.
Tully just came out on DVD. It's coming out on DVD.
Super Troopers 2, which was a surprise hit. And just launching is the I Feel Pretty movie with
Amy Schumer.
Amy Schumer. So
last question, thought, food for thought for the panel here, and then we'll call it a day. Will DVDs continue to be made?
At all?
Yeah. I mean, that's my question.
They'll be made for the Academy. That's the only way they're going to be able to watch the movies at the end of the year.
Because, you know...
I had a yard sale in the Hamptons last week, the Bill McCuddy failed TV star yard sale.
I know.
Which I do every couple of years. I had like 1,000 DVDs. I couldn't give those motherfuckers away. I could not... People would buy like a shirt or a sweater or a piece of furniture, and I'd go, hey, pick out a free DVD. Nah. Forget it. Wow. The Steve McQueen collection, the Stanley Kubrick collection. I think I sold the Kubrick collection. But like these things that were $300 and $400 when they were new, but they sent us for free, still in the shrink wrap. I'm like, you can give it to other people. We don't know anybody. So then eventually my neighbor comes over. This is great. My neighbor comes over and he's got a DVD player. And he goes, can you sell my DVD player? I go, I don't think so, but I'll try. So the next person that walks up, I go, hey, buy a DVD. You get a free DVD player. Still could not.
Wow. Unbelievable.
Sell a DVD.
Okay. Do you have a DVD player?
I do. You're looking. No, you're not looking at it here.
Bill
yes,
Bergoglio,
I
do you have a DVD player?
I have about four.
Netflix still send DVDs, or do they only stream? I think they do. I think you can still subscribe to Netflix and get DVDs sent to you.
I think the people that are getting the DVDs are people like us that, like you said earlier, like the critic screeners. I mean, I don't know many people that buy DVDs.
You know what? In the middle of the country or the farm country, they don't have good broadband service.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that's a broadband and they don't have TV. I mean, TV. They don't have a multiplex or 10 multiplexes or whatever, and maybe that's the chance for them to see it. I can tell you that, and I don't think anybody will have any idea what I'm going to say, but as soon as this podcast is over, Bill and Neil and I are going to watch a Laserdisc. So,
I was going
to
watch.
And then I'm sending it to the Smithsonian.
Do you remember when there were Laserdiscs and there was a rival format called CES Discs? They had a like
I
a
do piece, remember that.
It was a tone. Yeah. It was like a vinyl record where the tone arm would pick up the signal of the thing, and you had to slide it in, and it would come out. It was a really, as they say in Yiddish.
Well, thank you, Thomas Edison, for joining us this week on the podcast.
Anyway, it didn't really make it, but anyway, look. So
it's late, and we're tired, but it's a good tired.
And thanks for sitting around.
Neil's going to wear a parka next week.
Yeah, well, if I do an editing session at CUNY, I think I would need one. And you can reach Bill McCuddy at
Bill McCuddy on Twitter. And please, please follow me on Twitter because the Twitter purge this week, I lost 1,000 followers.
You can follow me at Neil Rosenapples.
He lost 10,000.
No, you can't.
You can tweet me or Bill and we can get a message to him. And as always, thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. We'll sit around talking movies again and TV too next week.